Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 466, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Tara Gray, who is the computer anxiety therapist from Computera. Welcome to the show, Tara. How are you doing?
Thanks, Jeff. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing excellent and ready to learn about your business and learn about what that actually means to be the computer anxiety therapist, which I think is a great thing to say, because, and I'm sure we'll get into that, what that actually means for your business. But why don't we get started and just give us a little background of basically how you got started into all the things that you do in your business.
Okay. Well, a long time ago.
In a land far, far away.
In a land, yeah. I had my very first client when I was pretty young, in high school and a little after that. I had a couple who had just gotten a computer and needed someone to set it up for them as well as teach them how to use it. Computers were, you know, becoming really popular then, and internet and email and all of that. So I started working with them. I set up their computer and set up their printer and taught them how to get an email address and how to use it and how to do searches online. And they really enjoyed it, and, you know, they wanted to continue learning. And over time, they wound up referring me to friends of theirs, family of theirs, and then those people referred me to friends of theirs, and on and on. And it started picking up, and it was something that I really, really enjoyed doing. I love, you know, sitting with people one-on-one and showing them how to use their technology, sharing my knowledge. So I was doing the computer tutoring pretty much on the side while I also, you know, was in school and getting my degree in math. And it was about 2006 when I decided to try doing the computer tutoring as a full-time job. And I dropped everything else and said, let me, you know, try this out and see how it works. And it just kept picking up from there. All of my clients were basically found through referrals at the time. So I wasn't really advertising much. I mean, I did a little bit here and there, but it just picked up and grew into this amazing business with people that I enjoy working with so much. I mean, I don't think I've ever had a client that I haven't enjoyed working with.
Wow.
And that's basically
that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm very lucky. I don't know. But that's pretty much how it started. And it kind of like fell into place. And I guess I was just lucky at the time that everything worked out. And, yeah, so.
Well, that's an awesome story. And it's funny how sometimes our first jobs, the things we do in this industry, will kind of push us in a direction and basically kind of carve out what it is we do. So you really started with, I mean, you set up their computer, but you also started with the tutoring part, and that's kind of where you went with your business. But I'm also looking on your website, and it looks like you do a lot of the things we do as far as fixing computers, virus removals, and different things like that. So, and it's neat because that incorporates both sides of what your customer needs. Because as I was telling you before the show, you know, there's a lot of times where, thank God, there's people like you, because some of us just get so frustrated with dealing with people and teaching them, hey, we're no, the blue eat, not that eat, no, the other, you know, and it's so, yeah. It's kind of frustrating.
Yeah,
but you got to have that patience, you know.
And you definitely have to have a lot of patience. And you know what the thing is they get frustrated too.
Mm-hmm.
The clients, you know, a lot of things pop up on the computer. They don't know what to do with them. Especially like with the PCs, there's always like some kind of update coming up and they're not sure whether they should do it or not. So yeah, they get very frustrated as well. And then of course, when the computer gets infected with something, yeah. So, I mean, it kind of went from, you know, showing them how to use their stuff and then there started to be problems. So I kind of had to get into that as well and start fixing their issues.
Now, so if you started tutoring and kind of setting computers up, did you kind of know how to do some of these other things before, or did you learn on the fly?
I feel like I learned on the way.
Okay.
Like, I pretty much everything that I really know, like about the computer and technology, I kind of feel like I taught myself. You know, I was just really interested in it and I would spend a lot of time on the computer trying to figure out, you know, how to use this software or how to make this work. And, I had a big interest in, like web designing and coding, and that really got me to, you know, use the computer a lot and really try to figure out how things work.
Okay.
Yeah, so just in using it, I kind of learned everything I really needed to know about. And there's a lot of stuff I don't work with, and I'll, you know, refer to someone else for those kinds of jobs. But I did take a couple little classes here and there. But like I said, most of what I've learned, I think, has been mostly on my own.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I'm looking at all the stuff you do, and you do, like I said, a lot of things that we do, setting up computers, doing the virus removals, doing the updates, getting all that stuff done. So
yeah.
Would it be fair to say that do you do any hardware at this point, or just kind of more the software, operating system, and tutoring?
Yeah, I would say more so it's software than hardware. I mean, I have replaced memory and hard drives and, you know, like I'll set up printers and stuff like that, but I don't do too much of the real hardware stuff. Like I usually refer out for that.
Okay. No, that's good. You know, it's nice when you can take your business and kind of, as my Canadian friends will say, niche down to something that you're passionate about, you're excited to do on a daily basis. And it sounds like, you know, after leaving school and doing this, you know, as a regular job, that it sounds like you still have that passion today from even the time that you started.
I do. I totally do. And it even more, I mean, like every year, it just makes me more and more happy to do what I do and to help the people. That's my main goal, really, is just to be able to help them and be there for them and understand that, you know, they have a hard time, you know, especially the baby boomers and the senior citizens, which are pretty much the bulk of the clients that I see, that, you know, they didn't grow up with it and they're really not sure how to use it. And they really need somebody to kind of be by their side one-on-one, rather than going into taking a class where everyone is at a different level, and that gets frustrating for them. So,
well, we know how classes can go too. It's like most of the room gets left out and there's a handful of people that actually get something. It's funny because I took a computer building class through my work, and I learned, even though it was paid for through my work, I learned absolutely zero as far as building a computer. When I asked how they were installing the operating system, the teacher just kind of did it for me. And so I learned nothing from that.
Right.
And so I definitely can see how that would be frustrating as far as, so more the one-on-one. So walk us through some of the typical things that you go through when you're consulting or tutoring some of these people. What are some of the things that they need to learn and they need help with?
Well, common issues are, honestly, I mean, setting up an email account, learning how to use email, how to reply, forward, compose a new message, Small things like that, how to attach files. You know, a lot of people just don't get how the system is organized and how all your files are organized on the computer into separate folders. So a lot of times I actually go back to, the old file cabinet and kind of like make a connection between the old physical filing cabinet and the folders on your computer to kind of help them understand, you know, what the folders are, where the files go, things like that. Okay. So when they're learning to do things like attaching, which seems like such a simple task because, you know, we know where our files are located. They don't. So it's very difficult for them to, find the files on their computers. Another big thing is just doing internet searches, you know, using Google, learning about links and what to click on, what not to click on when you're online.
Okay.
That's a big one. And then another big one would be something like social networking, like Facebook. Depending on the client, I have a lot of seniors that, you know, want to get onto Facebook so they could see pictures of their family, their grandchildren. And they also want to work with either Skype or FaceTime. A lot of my clients work with the iPad and the iPhone more than the computer.
Okay.
So it all depends, really. And then I do PC and I also do Mac. So that's kind of, some people have the PC, some people have the Mac, so I help with both. A big one really is like organizing on the computer because they just don't understand how things, where things are put and why they're put there. And what else do I do? I pretty much things that we think are very basic, but to them it's big and it's, you know, something they want to know how to do. Texting.
I like how you've broken everything down and really simplified it and brought it to their level so that they have a better understanding, because a lot of us, you're right, we think in terms of, this is so simple to do. How can you not figure it out? I've showed you once in what is your problem? But at the same time, if you're not, I mean, even from a standpoint of with what I do every day, there are times where I go, how did I do such and such? And if I can't remember as a technician how I did that last time, why would I think that somebody that's not doing it all the time would actually know? Now, I want to go back to email, because you were saying that, you know, sometimes we find email so simple, but I'll be honest with you. I've used Outlook for so long. And I'm so used to how it operates. I know it like the back of my hand. When I go to use webmail, man, it takes me so long to figure out which button is forward, which button is reply, why are some missing, why do I got to do a drop-down menu? And whether it's Yahoo, Gmail, or whatever, they're all very complicated.
Or worse,
AOL. That's really complicated.
That's a whole nother story.
So when you set up a new customer with an email, who do you usually go with?
I guess we mostly go with Gmail. And a lot of times it's because they've heard of Gmail.
Okay.
And they want to go with that service. They like Google in general and everything. So we do go with Gmail. And some of my clients continue to use the web-based version because that's, you know, the first thing they use, and then they kind of get used to it. Some people I bring automatically into Outlook.
Okay.
Just because I love Outlook. I think it's, you know, a wonder. It could be complicated for somebody that, you know, doesn't know how to use it. But like you said, they're all kind of complex. It depends on what you're used to using.
Right.
And Yahoo changes their system like all the time.
Yes.
Like I get calls, you know, oh, this isn't where it used to be, and I don't even know how to send an email now. I don't see the send button or whatever.
Right.
They're constantly changing. So yeah, they can be pretty confusing.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Now I will tell you, I try to push everybody to webmail. And the reason is because I literally don't want to fix their Outlook when it breaks.
I hear you.
So I look at it like this, even if it's set up as IMAP or whatever, I like the fact that I can go back in and I can redo somebody's computer and basically they can log into their account and they're back up and running with their email. Or if they have a backup computer, they're up and running. There's no issues. And I know there's not generally any issues, but I figure if I keep them in one area, it doesn't matter where they go. They can log in anywhere. Right. And get to that same thing and understand it. And Gmail is probably the most steady, I guess I'll say, as far as web-based mail in understanding it. Yahoo changes all the time. AOL hasn't had a new version forever, and I still have trouble figuring it out sometimes when I'm supporting it. So
do you use Gmail mostly too?
I use Gmail, but I use it through Outlook. Okay. Yeah. Now I have, yeah. I'm a little weird. I have 7 different email accounts that I have to watch over. And so
I know
those are all through, those are all through Outlook. And, you know, I'm really bad because whenever I read on my computer, I've never backed up like my PST and OST files.
Right.
Because I just basically go in, recreate a new profile, log into my different accounts using IMAP and set everything up. And it's pretty easy. So.
Right. Yeah. If you know how to do it, that's the thing.
Exactly. So as far as now, the difference between Outlook and let's say Gmail, what do you find is harder to teach the clients that you have?
Between the actual Outlook program?
Yes.
Or using the web-based version of Gmail?
Yes.
What do I find is harder?
I'm just wondering if the customers go, oh my gosh, this is really complicated, or are they both? I mean, they both could be similar as far as once you walk them through it, it makes sense, no matter what they're doing.
They both can be complicated.
Okay.
Gmail on the web, you know, it's not very easy to know what their icons mean. I mean, I know you can change them so that they have both the icon and the text. So, you know, this is reply, this is delete, but it's not very intuitive, I don't think, as far as what their icons mean.
I agree.
So I usually change that setting for most of my clients. But, you know, like being able to print an email in Gmail, having to print from the actual email screen and not from their browser. Print button, you know,
okay.
Things like that. They're confusing.
It is very confusing.
Yeah. Whereas with Outlook, I feel like everything is more contained. You know what you're clicking on, you know what you're doing. But Outlook also has a million other features that you can get, you know, caught up with and not really know what to do with. So if you're really just looking to, you know, send an email or forward or reply, I probably more so use the web-based Gmail with my clients than I would the Outlook. But if they're looking for something a little bit more, I think, you know, the contacts and Outlook are great. And, you know, something a little bit more involved, calendar and all that, then I usually will bring them into Outlook.
You know, what's funny. I must be one of those weird people that basically I have an Android phone. So my Google Calendar and email and everything is synced through there. My calendar, contacts, all that kind of stuff so that I can basically log into any phone and boom, my stuff's up and running. I use Outlook for email only. I don't use the calendar and I don't use the, contacts at all.
Oh, really? Wow.
So yeah, that's probably why I've really never had any problems with Outlook as far as it crashing or binding up on me or whatever.
Because it was just emails. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I got used to using Outlook and the iCloud because I have an iPhone and an iPad. So everything syncs like perfectly between them all. And, I finally got it that way. Of course, in the beginning, it was very difficult, but things have improved over time with, you know, both Apple and Microsoft, and now everything works well. So I just continue to use Outlook, you know, calendars, contacts, all of that.
Well, that's good. So what other types of things do you do for your customer base? What are the things you're doing on a regular basis besides helping them set up their emails and stuff? It sounds like in your business, there's this long-term relationship where if they have a question, they're going to come to you to get that answer no matter what it is.
Right. Yeah, definitely. My clients tend to be ongoing customers. So, there's so much to learn. There's so many new things coming out. And they really want to continue knowing all about everything that's available to them. Usually most of my clients are like weekly, so I'll see them on a weekly basis or every other week, whatever, but usually see them for a long period of time as well. Actually, the clients that I was mentioning that I first started with, I still know them to this day, and I still do see them once in a while when they have issues with their computer, which of course it's like they're fourth or fifth computer since the one I originally set up. I still see them. They moved, but I still see them. A lot of what I tend to do with my clients, because I take notes for like everything that we do. So okay. If I'm teaching someone how to, post a status message on Facebook or how to upload a photo on Facebook, we go step by step and I write down every single specific instruction for them so that they can go through the list on their own, like when I'm not there, and try to do it for themselves.
Oh, that's great.
Now, a lot of repetition is needed, though.
Sure.
Even though all the steps are written down, they need to repeat these things a lot. And if they don't do it, in between each session, then they kind of just forget it. So then we have to go over it again. So there's a lot of repetition involved in, in them being able to learn how to do something finally on their own. I'm always like in the background, kind of, like rooting them on.
Right.
Like you can do it, you can do it. You just have to keep practicing, keep trying. And they, giving them the confidence to keep trying and keep working at it.
I like that. That, a lot of us could learn lessons from that for our normal client base when we get frustrated and go, oh, that stupid customer,
I don't know what it is. I must have something in me that like just is totally fine with it. Totally patient and accepting. I guess I am very accepting and like understanding of people of all types. And I have so many different types of clients. I have elderly, I have some young ones, I have very disabled clients that can't get out at all. It's just a whole mishmash of kinds of people and types of people, and they're all wanting to do the same thing.
Okay.
And they all should be able to do the same thing if they want to, nobody should really be like turned down as far as because of their age or because of a disability. They should all be able to learn how to use technology to better their lives. And it has. I have a client who says that the computer like practically saved her life, because she's able to communicate with so many people that she couldn't really communicate with before because she doesn't really get out.
Okay.
So it's really amazing.
Yeah.
Technology is awesome.
It is awesome. Okay. Now I feel guilty, but no, thank you for that. it's a good lesson, and it's something to remember. I think when you're doing this business and you are supporting a customer base, no matter what you're doing for them, you should really have their interest at heart and really want to help them to the best of their ability. I truly do believe that. And I think that sometimes people just need to be taught things. And if you have to do it on a repetitive basis, it might get repetitive. But I will say this, there's a lot of things that I will do, even though I love to do it, but as long as I'm getting paid, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I can understand that. course. So. But it's, you know, there's a saying, I forget the full saying, but something about, you know, they're going to remember how you made them feel.
Right.
You know, they might not remember like exactly what you did or whatever, but they're going, however they felt after you worked with them, that's what they're going to remember. And that's why they keep coming back.
Right. And that's, and you know what? And a lot of us, to be honest with you, wish for those long-term clients like you have. So you really carve something out that is working well for you.
Right.
And is getting that constant, you know, that constant weekly basis or bi-weekly basis mm-hmm. or monthly or whatever. And you're remaining in contact with your customer base, which, like I said, a lot of us would love to do that. Now, I do have a question, though.
Sure.
I'm looking under the computer lessons on your website, and I see using the mouse. So now a lot of us would say that using the mouse would be a basic understanding. I know it's not, because there's two buttons on there. So Apple probably had the right idea in the day, you know, in their heyday with one button, but the reality is we couldn't do that. So how do you explain something like using the mouse to your customer?
Wow.
Oh. Sorry to put you on the spot. I was just curious.
I don't know that I necessarily explain it. I guess I explain what it does. You know, your mouse is controlling the arrow on the screen.
Okay.
And when you move your mouse upward on the pad, your arrow moves up. You move your mouse downward, it moves down, and
okay.
left and right as well, and diagonally. I do have to remind clients to keep the mouse with, you know, the top up, because especially like
the wireless mice, if someone turns upside down or
don't laugh. Yeah, with a wireless mouse, you can sometimes have it going the wrong way, and then your arrow's going completely not where you want it.
Oh my gosh!
And then the clicking becomes an issue.
Right.
Not just knowing whether to click on the left or click on the right, which is, that's a whole other story, but just being steady in clicking with your index finger on the left button, keeping the mouse steady enough on the table or on the pad so that you don't wind up dragging an icon or you know, doing a double click, which is another story, a whole other thing. When doing a double click, how fast you need to do that. Not clicking three times, because that can actually do something else. So they're really, like, even though it just is a mouse with two buttons, it actually can be complex, because there's so many different like ways you can use it.
Right.
And then if it has a scroll wheel, that's like another part.
I guess a mouse is more complicated than what I originally thought. You're right. Those are all valid things that people, if they don't understand that, the keeping it steady and keeping it in one place and not over-clicking. One of the ways that I generally explain it, I explain it with the two buttons, is that the left mouse click is going to be basically, it's going to do something. It's going to say, okay. And if you hit the right mouse button, that is going to be your menu for most programs that you can go into.
Right.
And people still, it goes right over their head. They don't get it. It's like, whatever, but show me how to do that again.
Or they hit the wrong one by accident.
Right. Right.
It can be a complicated device.
Now I'm looking on here, and so it looks like you do lessons in, you know, Facebook. I would imagine, as far as social media, is probably your most popular. Do people nowadays, young and older, actually use things like Twitter or LinkedIn?
A lot of older people ask me, like, what is Twitter? Would I use it? What's Instagram?
Oh Lord! Now,
Pinterest, definitely. They have an interest because they hear of these words and they want to know what it is, you know. Not too many of them necessarily like have Twitter accounts or you know, I kind of steer them away because I honestly don't think that they'd be very useful.
Right.
I have clients who like have their own businesses and they have like a Facebook page, and then I'll help them get into Twitter or LinkedIn or, you know, Google Plus. Nah, not really. We don't really do that much.
Oh, see, and you know what? And I appreciate that from you, because the reason I use Google Plus is because all the regular people are not on there.
That makes sense.
That's where I can talk to my other nerdy techs that we can go talk back and forth and have little groups, and nobody cares about it because it's not a thing.
That is true. Yes. It's still under the radar. But so yeah, we definitely depending on the client, you know, we'll set up accounts on all those different social networking platforms, depending on what their needs are. You know, I work with doctors' offices and dentist offices and stuff like that, and we do social media marketing together. So that's a big thing with them.
Now, this goes into a whole nother area, because this is something else I'm curious about, of how do you deal with and make up passwords? Do you have
personally, or
well, do you have, as far as your customer base, do you have a way that you teach them to make a password, or do you use something that they're already familiar with and maybe they write it down on a 3x5 card or a post-it note or something like that, or keep it in a book? Or
I usually, when we're creating a password, I usually will ask them, what do you want to use as your password? And I say, it needs to have this, it needs to have that, you know, capital letter, special character, numbers, letters. And they usually will come up with something that's like really simple, you know, like the first names of their grandchildren or whatever. And because it's something easy that they can remember.
Right.
You know, but I'll have them add some stuff to it here and there. Recently, I've been working with a couple different like password managers with some of them. I've been introducing them into some of my sessions and, you know, telling them that if they have like one main password, they can basically store all their other passwords within that. And that way they can have safe passwords.
Right. Okay. That's good.
A lot of them, though, they just want to use like the same thing for every site. Oh. And of course, I've, you know, tried to steer them away from that. But some of them, that's what they want to do. So,
well, and not only that, they're going to be calling you all the time and go, I can't remember my password for this because you had me make it so complicated. It's not the same.
Exactly. And I do keep track of a lot of my clients' passwords just in case that does happen. But it's a difficult thing nowadays because they're all afraid too of being hacked.
Sure.
And you always have to change, especially like with Yahoo recently, just having to change your password all the time, it seems.
You should. Hey, with Yahoo, I've been saying this for years, you should be changing your password every 90 days, period.
Yes, very true.
I can't tell you how many people that have gotten their accounts hacked. And that's why I laugh at this news that just came out that says, oh, Yahoo's just coming forth. I mean, what do you mean they're just coming forth?
Coming forth.
I've got customers that have been hacked over the last few years many, many times. And I've moved off of Yahoo onto Gmail. Some, they're still stuck in there and we change their password, or, you know, AOL is another one. AOL, believe it or not, that gets hacked all the time.
And
nobody says anything about that. You know, it's like, so anyways.
Well, you know, that's another big topic, you know, besides the whole password thing, but the getting hacked and the getting scammed thing.
Yes.
Which a lot of my customers have been the victim of some kind of scam, usually with, you know, a number popping up on their screen telling them their computer's infected and to call. And as many times as I've reminded my clients, please, if you get something like that, please call me first, you know, they sometimes don't, and they will call the number.
Right.
And, you know, get themselves into trouble. So that has happened a lot, and it seems to keep happening. It's actually, it really bothers me because, like, they're targeting seniors.
Right.
And it really does make me very upset.
Yep. And it's one of those things where I try to tell my customers to call me no matter what. Hey, right. leave a voicemail, whatever. I will get back to you. Just don't do anything with that. You know, you don't need to be calling anybody else to fix your problem if I'm your computer person.
Right, and, exactly.
But like you said, that most of them, here's the problem. It plays on fears. Human nature is something pops up on the screen and says, you're infected. Call this number. We can fix it now. You panic. And mm-hmm. and I'll tell you why I say that. Because I have several accounts, and the Gmail ones I get no spam on, but I have some other accounts that I do get spam on a regular basis. And there have been times where I've seen something come up from PayPal, which is a service that I use, on one of these accounts. And it actually took me aback for a second reading what the email said. And I had to stop, look at the account and go, whoa, wait. This has nothing to do. And I go, if I'm affected by that, you know, I can see how other people get affected by things that pop up on their screen and go, you know, oh, I'm affected. Now, I've taught my kids, and my kids, if something pops up on their screen, you know, they come running to me. Hey, Dad, I've got this thing. It's on there. And I go in and clear it out. No big deal. Mm-hmm. And I've got clients that will do that. But a lot of them, you're right. They call the 1-800 number. Then it's worse. Then they pay a bunch of money, and then they still end up calling me.
Right. And it's like, they're like, they didn't want to bother me.
Right.
Well, what do you mean? Just bother me. I don't care. You know, I'd rather help you than, you know, you getting involved in this scam. I had one client who, you know, paid the money and then told me about it afterwards. And I had her cancel the payment and, close her bank account. These scammers were incessantly calling her. They would not stop.
Oh.
For weeks, they would not stop telling her, you know, that they needed the money. She, you know, needed to pay for what they brought her from 10 back to Windows 10 back to Windows 7. It was like this whole thing. Yeah, it was horrible. I hope she stopped getting those calls. I have to ask her.
Now, was that on a landline?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's too bad because, on a cell phone, you could actually block those numbers. I think you can on a landline, but it's a little more complicated. You have to put in a code with the number to block
it. We did do that. We called the phone company and they instructed us. The problem was is the scammers were calling from all these different
changing
numbers.
Different. Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. Wow. Yeah, that's
scary.
Well,
we had to call the police. The town police had to come over several times just to take all the information down. She was being harassed.
So. Oh wow, that's never fun. Wow. Okay. So yeah, I mean these are things that you have to deal with on a regular basis because of your clients, because of the tutoring you do. Passwords are definitely a big one. I go back and forth on, I use LastPass myself, but I go back and forth on actually getting my customers involved with that because it's another layer that I have to think about and have to teach them. And I look at, you know, my LastPass account, my master password is 32 characters. Well, the reality is most people are not going to make, you know, probably anything over 7 to 10 characters, I would imagine.
Right.
But yeah, I wish it was an easier transition to get people into doing that because it is definitely the best way to have different passwords for every site you're on. Now, with the older community though, how many things do they actually make passwords for? In other words, I know a lot of people, especially the elderly, will still go to the bank. They don't do any internet banking or anything like that.
Some of them do though.
Okay.
Not all of them. I mean, some people are wary about it because of all the hacking, so they don't want anything to do with online banking. But some of my clients, you know, rely on that. So they have, you know, their logins for those sites. It almost seems like any site that you really get involved with these days, like you have to sign up. You know, they'll have an Amazon account. They'll have obviously their email, the Facebook account, their Skype, their iCloud account. You know, like there's all these different accounts that they make you have these days.
Right.
And they YouTube account.
You know,
I'm trying to think.
Well, the one I love is when somebody does get in, because not everybody gets iPhones, but when people actually get Android phones for the first time, they go from a dumb phone to a smartphone, and it might be an Android phone. And of course, whoever's at the you know store will sign them up with a Gmail account, mm-hmm. so that they have that log, which is good. But the problem is, by the time they bring it to me, and I've got I do actually do this, even though it's not my preference. I do actually teach my customers how to use smartphones and different things like that and walk them through the process. But I've got to go and, okay, what's your password? And then
they don't know it.
Yeah, they don't know it, or they didn't write it down, or, you know, so there's this whole thing where you have to go and try to figure out all this stuff for the customer. Or
yes,
one of the things that really gets me is, especially with the newer Windows 8 and Windows 10, you have all these people that have created these Microsoft accounts that don't realize that they actually created a Microsoft account, mm-hmm. or they've used, which I love, they put a four-digit PIN code on logging into their computer, which is great, except the time that I've got to redo a system and I need to know that password.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so now, if they don't remember the password, the only thing we can do is hopefully that their email address still works and they can get in there and we can go in and reset it. And you know, but that's a whole nother process, and that takes a lot of time out of doing all that stuff, you know.
It really does. I've run into that a lot where, you know, something needs to be reset, and you know, they're, oh, how can I do such and such? I'm like, oh, it's so easy, let's do it right now. And then like all these passwords need to be reset, and then they don't have access to this email. It winds up taking the whole hour anyway.
Right.
Like, sorry, you know, but
right.
Stuff takes time.
Now, when you're, so one of the things that I see with a lot of people, and really doesn't matter their, well, it does matter their age a little bit, but I'd say baby boomers and above, is when they go into the web browser and they go to, you tell them, hey, go to google.com. Mm-hmm. And what do? They go to the search bar and they just type Google.
Yes.
Or whatever. And it takes them to a search page, which sometimes, depending on what you're typing in, will come up with illegitimate stuff right at the top that somebody will click on and think they're going to a website. So how do you teach people not to do that? What's kind of your process in teaching them that whole thing?
So when we initially do a search, I try to tell them to stay clear of like the first three results that come up. Because I tell them, you know, they're usually advertisements. Sometimes they may be what you're actually looking for, but, I have them see, one of the biggest things that I tell my clients is you have to look at the whole page. You have to read what's on your screen because people just want to click. They're click happy.
Right.
So I'm like, what you have to look at, you know, the second line after the actual, underlined link, because the second line will actually tell you where you're going, which website you're going to.
Right.
And if that website has nothing to do with where you wanted to go initially, then that's probably not it. I think, I forget if Google still actually says the word ad at the top of the search results. I forget. But I know they used to. They used to also have like a different colorization in the background, I think, like a yellow or something. So I kind of just, you know, have them make sure that they look at the whole thing, and even skip over maybe the first three, and then start looking.
Okay. Well, that's a good way to teach them that. I think that it's really. Well, let's go into something else here, kind of along the same lines. When we're talking about links, I'm thinking about email also. Now, people get emails and they're going to get links on there. So do you go through that whole process with them of don't click on links? Do you tell them not to click on links at all in an email if somebody's trying to share a photo or something, or what's kind of the process that you go through? Because it's not an easy answer. So I'm just curious about what you do.
Well, I don't tell them not to click on any links. I mean, if somebody's trying to share like a photo album or whatever, I'll kind of teach them to look at like the headers of the email and where is this email actually coming from? You know, is it really coming from Mary Jane, or does it just say that in the name? You know, look at the actual email address that it's coming from. Is that her email address? No. So there's something not right there. Especially with the emails that come from companies, of course, you know, look at the headers.
Right.
Dissect the email a little bit. Read the email. Actually read it and look at, you know, the words. Look at the spelling. But really, really read, and you'll see that this is not legit.
Gotcha. No, that's good. Now, one of the things I used to teach, and I've done for years, and this is not 100%, this is not bulletproof, but what I will do is I will actually copy the link and paste it into the browser.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then go from there. So, but there are actually ways nowadays to disguise that link and make it even look like it's where it's supposed to go. So unless you're going to open up the hyperlink itself and look inside to see what it's actually pointing to, that's a whole nother issue that you're really not going to get people to do, I don't think.
Crazy. No, you're definitely not. They're not going to understand that.
No.
Oh my gosh. Terrible.
So now let me ask you, I got another question, because I'm just looking through some of the things you have on your website, and I'm just curious of how you do these things, because I find it fascinating, to be honest with you. And it's a good learning experience for the rest of us to know how to help others. But things like organizing and sharing photos. So what is the, because I know photos can be such a mess, along with files, but photos especially. So what do you teach to organize those photos in a way that people can get back to them when they want them?
Well, you know, everybody has like a different way that, you know, either a different program that they're using to organize their photos. Some people are still using Picasa, and people on the Mac are using iPhoto. So I kind of explain to people first, like where they're, you know, regardless of what program they're using to actually organize or view their photos, that their photos are files that are actually sitting somewhere on the computer.
Okay.
So I'm very big on like having people understand about the organization. And so I'll show them, you know, like all of your photos are in your pictures folder. And then they're organized by date or whatever, organized by, topic, and I'll actually show them like where they sit on the computer first, and then try to help them to understand that whatever program they're using to view them is really just like pulling from those folders that already exist that are sitting on the computer.
Okay.
So no, I'm trying to get them to understand that like they're actually there, you right. know, like
the physical digital copy is actually right. on their computer. Okay.
It's yeah, like it's physically there. It's like sometimes I'll say where are your photos, and they'll be like, I'm just going to use Picasa as an example. My photos are Picasa, and I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, well, that's where my photos are. I'm like, no, but where are the actual files saved? You know, like they think that the program that they're using is their photos.
Right. kind of like the E is the internet, right?
Right, right. Yes. Yeah. It, you know, there's a lot of terms that people just aren't used to.
Well, and quite honestly, most of us techs actually overcomplicate it too. So we don't make it any easier on them.
That's true.
Well, I know one of the things that, the only reason I know this is because I had to go through it. And I've been taking digital photos since like 2002. And I had to go back and actually they were such a mess for such a long time because I didn't keep up with them, as most people don't, right? And so I went back and I was organizing them. And the best way that I found to organize them is I had to do it by year. I'd make a folder for year, and then I'd make a folder for each month. And then the only way to put them in any logical order, I'd have to start with the year, then the month, then the day, and then whatever after that. And even doing all that, when I went back to actually organize these a little bit better, because I kind of was just throwing them in folders, I'm going back and doing all this stuff, and literally every year would take me about 4 hours to go through these things and make it a logical order. So I know it's one of those things that's very difficult. And the thing is, you have them on your computer, but any program can, you know, like Google or whatever, can usually organize these things actually in a fairly smart way. So I
definitely, you're right.
So hopefully the customers are able to use different programs like that versus just having old school like myself and doing it by some sort of date in backwards order.
Right, like doing it by hand. Yeah. Right. No, the programs are very useful, especially like on the Mac. Their photo program is really pretty good.
Now, I will have to debate that with you, Tara, because yes, I just had to move a person. And now, granted, this person had over 30,000. Yes, I said 30,000 photos. Okay. And she had a MacBook Pro. And the hierarchy in on the Mac, she could not. She was trying to use an Airport Express Extreme, one of the ones with the 2 terabyte hard drive in there, to back her stuff up. But it was supposed to be internet connected. They moved, they pulled it off the internet. And so she was plugging in an Ethernet cable to have this thing back up. And it was supposed to make an image, and it wasn't making a full image. And it was just, you know, there was something wrong with the MacBook Pro. But I ended up having to basically move that to a laptop and use something like Carbonite to make sure all her photos and everything were backed up, because there was just so many that you would look in the iPhoto, and I think iPhoto changed to something else. But anyways, there was actually two programs when she had updated to, might have been El Capitan, and when she did that, there was two different programs, and they were almost kind of fighting together to, you know, show the pictures. And you didn't know, okay, is that picture actually backed up? Oh, wait, that one's from my iPhone. Well, where's that one kept? Oh, that one's over here. And it's like, so now once I moved her over and I still had the iCloud and everything, and I was able to sync everything up, everything's in the pictures folder. And so she, you know, I was able to show her, I said, okay, everything's here. Carbonite's backing this up. It's not a big deal. And as long as you add stuff to here, and I said, anything you're adding to your iPhone from now on will automatically sync through the iCloud back down to your PC. And it's going to go in this folder so that you should have not only backups in the iCloud, but you'll have backups on Carbonite. And so it was a big deal. And I always get concerned when, especially with that many photos the reason this all came about, she felt like she was missing some. And obviously I'm looking there and I go, I don't know what to tell you, because I'm not sure which photos you might be missing. I looked at the images that were on the Airport Extreme and all that, and I couldn't find anything that was different. All her stuff was actually on her MacBook Pro, but anyway,
how long did this whole process take?
Oh my gosh. It was hours. I spent way more hours doing this whole process. And it was like I split it into a 4-step process because I was so nervous that I was going to delete some photo somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it's scary.
Yeah. So I made images upon images, and then I took the stuff from the images, and then I moved the stuff, and then it was something else. So,
and moving those libraries, oh my gosh,
I couldn't even tell you. As a matter of fact, I tried to use, and I can't remember what happened now, but I think I tried to use iCloud's program. No, I was using the web browser to try to download the 30,000 photos, and the browser, it didn't matter which browser I used, kept crashing.
Yeah.
I tried Safari. Right. I tried Google. I tried Internet Explorer. It didn't matter. They all crashed the same. So finally, what I did was I was able to use the iCloud app, desktop app, downloaded it, fired it up, and then I was able to copy the files from their server down to the computer. And it took hours, but that actually worked.
That's good. Thank God it worked. Yes. Yeah, I can imagine hours and hours, that many photos.
And I'm panicking because I'm like going, I don't know if I can bring these down on the computer or not. I don't know, you know.
You're just trying it out, right. Seeing if it works.
I'm like, and I'm not a real big Mac person. So, you know, when people say Mac or iPhone, I kind of roll my eyes, but that's just me. There's definitely a need for it, and Macs have their place. iPhones definitely have their place, and people are just used to that. So I have to know that technology a little bit, but sometimes, even today, after doing it for so long, I still learn things on the fly. So.
Oh, yeah, of course. No, I mean, I still do as well, and you feel so cool when you figure something out you didn't really know before.
Not really. I go, thank God it's done. Hey, can I have my money now?
Or I would be like, oh, I knew how to do it.
Yeah, no problem. No, and I'm always honest with my customers. And I think that's an important point, is that if a customer says, can we do this? I'll say, you know what? I've never personally done that before, but I'm sure if you give me the time, we can figure it out.
Right.
And if they want to go that route, that's fine. If not, I look at it sometimes is, even if it takes me a little bit longer than what it should, I've still learned something in the process, so that if it happens again, I can replicate that and do it. So,
yeah, no, it's great to be able to learn something on the spot and then use it the next time.
Now, I got one more question for you before we end off the show. I'm looking at you. You also do a monthly PC maintenance program. And so do you do... Also, do you do this remotely? Do you do this as far as, do you have an automated program that does it for you, or a combination of both?
I do it remotely, mostly. There are people who want me to come in, do it there, but I'd rather do it remotely. I just use like TeamViewer.
Okay.
Log into their systems. I've already installed that on their systems. And we'll log in and, you know, perform updates and all of those types of scannings and all of that. Because a lot of times I've tried to teach them that they could do it themselves, you know, especially like their malware scans and all of that, and backups and stuff, but they don't tend to do it.
Right.
And I'm like, you don't know how important this really is. It's like you take care of your car, you know, but you don't take care of your computer the same way, and you really need to. So I just figured, you know, I might as well do it for them.
Okay.
So yeah, the remote part is just so much easier.
Okay. That's good. So yeah, that's definitely worth it. And I think on a monthly basis, that's probably a good idea too. I know some people will do it quarterly, and some people will do it every 6 months or once a year, something like that. But on a monthly basis, in what I always tell people too, when it comes to this type of any type of maintenance, really, is, do you want your computer to work just like the day you brought it home from the store? Or better yet, would you like to work a little bit better than the day you brought it home from the store?
Right.
Because I'm going to get rid of all the junk that's bogging you down that you actually don't need. And, make sure all the updates are done. Because a lot of times what I'll find is, I think a lot of times PCs are slow, or can tend to be slow, if they're downloading a bunch of updates in the background. You don't really see it going on. Customer doesn't know what's going on, and they say, oh, wait a minute, this thing is really slow. Why is it slow? And it's like, well, because it's making these 300 updates, or trying to download this information from 300 updates during the day while you're on it.
Yeah, they don't realize that.
Well, very good. So, okay. So TeamViewer, and then you just do those remotely. And then do you do any tutoring remotely?
I have. I've done some tutoring over the TeamViewer, also with Skype at the same time, instead of, you know, actually being on the regular phone.
Okay.
And I will basically, you know, teach people how to do certain specific things on using the remote software. Yeah.
Now,
and I also use it for, you know, if somebody calls me up and they have some kind of problem and it doesn't make sense to really run over there, you know, just do it over remote.
Now, so have you already pre-set up Skype for them and added you in to their Skype profile so that you can connect very easily with them?
Yes. They're all on my Skype profile.
Okay. That's awesome. That's something I wouldn't have thought of, to be honest with you. So that's a good idea.
Yeah, that way, you know, it's very easy to connect. I don't have everyone on there, but
I think I look at sometimes when I'm trying to talk to a customer, and I've said this before, but cell phone technology and the call quality just sucks nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely horrible, and really depending on where you're at, it's mm-hmm. like you get people either there's a lag or there's it's hard to hear, or the customer has trouble hearing. So
something cuts out. Yeah.
Right. So I think because Skype, obviously we're having a conversation over Skype right now. And it's very clear. You're not, now you're located in New Jersey area.
Yes.
Okay. So we're hundreds of miles away from each other, and yet we're still have a clear connection and can talk.
Super clear. Yeah. Really wonderful.
Much better than any cell phone out there. That's for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Well, Tara, I appreciate all the information that you brought today and just a look inside your business and the different things that you do. I think you've opened my eyes to some things that I probably need to get a little bit better at. You made me feel guilty. So I feel like this has been worth my time and effort. No, I do appreciate the information, because sometimes we're just in the panic mode and we just want to get the job done, and we forget that there's other people out there that really, they need our help. They need our patience. They need us to understand that they don't understand certain things when it comes to technology.
Yeah, that's it. That's definitely it.
Well, if people wanted to find out more about you or contact you, ask you some questions, what would be the best way to do that?
Probably just by visiting my website, just really easy to get to, computara.com. I'm pretty much Computara on everything. So Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, all of that. So it's pretty, very easy to find me. Also my email address, tara@computara.com. And if you go to my website, it has all my contact information on there. You could even buy gift cards on my website.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff on there. And if you want to follow me, like on Facebook, it's facebook.com/Computara.
Awesome. Well, like I said, I appreciate you coming out and sharing with us today. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, no, this has been great. Thank you so much, Jeff.
No problem. Well, you guys can find me on the Google+ at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you would like to be a guest on the show like Tara was, email me at guest@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. And you too can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.